The first full week of trading for February started off in a rather volatile way. The market gave back nearly all of last Friday's gains on Monday, only to recover almost all of that and then some on Tuesday, as investors tried to kind of just mark time or take a step back and some hop on and some hop off the same very buses that are going in all different directions as markets digest a good deal of earnings news and some economic data. On Thursday morning, it was announced, for example, that first-time claims for unemployment fell. Again, this time dropping 5,000. Also, one of the smartest things that I've done lately is to renew my subscription to the Cincinnati Business Courier. And it's because of that that I was informed on Thursday morning by the Courier's daily emails that General Electric Aviation will be bringing engine work back to the United States. They bought an Italian parts supplier for $4 billion back in December. They already are planning to build plants in Mississippi and Alabama, and they have a third plant will be built somewhere else. We perhaps have some ideas on where this aviation work can occur. Well, to discuss what that means for us as investors and for us as citizens of the United States, it's a pleasure. Welcome back to the show, Martin Giesbrecht, a PhD, who was a Fulbright scholar and was the chairman of the economics department at Northern Kentucky University after teaching many years in Wilmington College. Martin joins us telephonically from his perch in Northern Kentucky. Martin, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Well, you're most welcome. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, it is. It really is. By the way, Martin's one dandy clarinet player, too, in case I forgot to mention that. Martin, tell us, what is happening with this kind of macro to micro development? We have not just the GE news, but Ford's bringing jobs back. Even Samsung announced that it's bringing manufacturing of cell phones to the United States in Apple's own backyard in Silicon Valley. What are the factors behind this trend?
Well, we can begin with globalization. Globalization has had a huge impact on our own economy, and has caused some unemployment, and has helped to depress the wages here in the United States. But globalization also has the opposite effects in the countries with which we trade. It tends to push up wages and make labor scarcity, and so in those countries, they're beginning to look a little bit more like our country, and the result is that the big advantage, the big beginning advantage of globalization, of finding really inexpensive places to outsource our production, are beginning to disappear, and we are finding it very useful and easier to manage, by the way, to bring a lot of stuff back home again and build things here.
Right, so
I'd like to address a few other things too, that are happening in the economy. You know, we live in a variety of universes, and I'm always sort of amused about financial newsmakers, yourself included.
I'm a news reporter, not a newsmaker.
Yeah, a reporter. And I think to myself, you live in a universe that's a little bit different from me. I'm an economist, and I look at the actual economic processes of production, consumption, and exchange, and I find that there has been for quite a while some good news that has been ignored in the press and in the media. Well, not all of it has been ignored. We have had a lot of news about the new energy independence that's on the horizon from fracking and gas and oil, but we've had a lot of other things that are kind of good news. We're making progress in helping immigrants stay in this country and not have to go back home again after they've completed their educations here. And that's very good for our nation. We have a lot of new wave technologies that are coming in. You know, we've had enormous technological innovation in the financial industry in the past decade or more. And it seems like we've been soft pedaling the production industry, but now we're getting some new things, not the least of which are new batteries, which are very interesting. By the way, the disaster of the fire-prone batteries in the Dreamliner is actually sort of a good thing because it encourages us to look for new technologies that would be very useful, not just in airplane construction, but also in providing ways of storing up electricity from renewable sources, which that's always been the big problem, is what happens when the wind stops and the wind farms stop turning the blades, and we don't have electricity when we most need it.
Right.
So all these new technologies are very promising. I'm also not terribly upset about the ecological problems that we have, not because I'm not concerned about the environment, but I think the effort to improve our environment is going to create a lot of jobs, a lot of new businesses, and that's also all to the good for our economy right now. So I see a lot of good stuff happening in the economy itself, even as we've gone through so much trouble in our financial world. So now if we could get the government, the various governments, to improve their functions, why, we might be on a new kind of boom era.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it, when you think that it was about 13 years ago that the technology bubble was about to burst, and some people had been sounding the alarm, modern-day Cassandras, and who were unfortunately ignored. And here we are today with what some people would say, well, this is a low-tech or a natural resource boom as opposed to the boom in technology. And yet it's the improvements in technology, the making smaller of devices and getting down into a cellular, molecular, and an atomic level to unlock resources and to make manufacturing more efficient. It's the improvements set in place about a dozen years ago or so, actually more, but the tech sector, that are leading now to this renaissance in manufacturing. Is that the way you see it?
Oh, yes, indeed. In fact, I don't really see a big split between high-tech and low-tech, because so many of the low-tech things, like getting more oil and gas out of the ground, is really a high-tech success story. In new drilling technologies, new seismic technologies, and all that kind of thing that helps us locate these places which were hidden from us before.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we're also doing some new technology in areas where technology has not been particularly strong. We're doing great innovation in education delivery. A lot of it is dubious, in my opinion, but a lot of it is also very interesting. We're beginning to find new forms. I'm personally interested in academia and in schools, and I see a lot of new kinds of schools popping up all over the place, and I think out of that, we're going to get a much better educated and better suited American labor force, a labor force suited to the new technologies that we need to have.
Sure. Let's circle back to the labor force and into wages. You mentioned earlier that over in foreign markets, wages had started to rise, and
right.
Here in the United States, wages had been topped out, or real wages adjusted for inflation have actually declined in many industries.
Right.
How much further does that have to go to encourage more manufacturing to come back to the United States, or have we already crossed that tipping point?
I really don't think it's so much the wages that are bringing the industry back to the United States. That is contributory, of course, but it's also managerial convenience to have these things close by where you can control them better.
Mm-hmm.
It's also access to markets. The cost of delivering sub-assembly parts from China is increasing as transportation costs increase with the higher prices of fuel nowadays. So it's a very complicated and mixed picture. We're not going to bring all of our manufacturing back to the United States, but a goodly bit of it is going to come back and is indeed doing so. And, of course, it makes big news when it does that.
Sure.
We're aware of it when it happens.
Right. In the last minute that we have, Martin, what do we need as investors to, and again, as people who are find ourselves as players in the economic game, what do we need to be aware of? What do we need to be keeping our eye on to make sure that we, as investors, hit the ball out of the park, make sure that we get our fair shares of singles and doubles?
Well, I would say right now my biggest concern is political rather than economic or financial. I would hope that we are able to somehow get the entire United States, including our political parties, to work together. And that would be the one single most important improvement in the American outlook.
Great, great observations. And Martin Giesbrecht, I want to thank you so much for taking part of your weekend to be with us here.
It's always a pleasure, Chris.
And for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.